You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to kuci.org. You're listening to In the Garden with University of California Master Gardeners, Tina Spindler and Katrina Kirkaby. Hey, Katrina, how you doing?
I'm doing really good, Tina. How are you doing?
Good. Excited to do our June show.
I know. It's so beautiful out right now.
It's amazing that we're already in June. This year's flying by. But June is a great month in the garden. It's right before we get the terrible heat. So there's tons of stuff blooming in our garden and lots of food growing. So let's talk about what we're going to do this month.
You know, I love spending time in the garden in June. Everything's so pretty, and it's not too hot. And I like to socialize in the garden. I like to garden in the garden.
It's a great time to entertain, I think, because you haven't hit the super hot of summer, so it's super pleasant outside. Although we do usually get our gray days, our June gloom, I still think the evenings in June are pretty nice out in the garden especially.
Yes, and it depends if you're close to the beach or if you're farther inland. You almost have two different yards.
Yeah, two different.
Especially this time of year where if you're closer to the beach, you have more of the June gloom, and it tends to break off farther away from the beach sooner.
Exactly. But June is also a really interesting month because we have, of course, we all know that I love flowers and blooming things, and there are a number of plants that have their peak bloom in June. So I thought we'd talk a little bit about those and how to care for those plants and choose them if you want to plant some of them in your yard.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So one of my favorites that blooms in June is hydrangea.
Oh.
And Katrina and I both have hydrangeas, and they are very high water use plants, so we don't recommend planting a lot of them, but they are wonderful to have. Those great big huge pom-pom flower heads are just stunning, and I like to cut them and bring them in the house. They make great cut bouquets, and Katrina saves her shower water to water her hydrangea because she's very conscientious about those high water use plants.
You know, they say being a master gardener, you got to be wise and not use high water and set a good example. But I tell you, my hydrangeas gets my shower water upstairs, and my hydrangeas upstairs get my sink water upstairs, and I have beautiful hydrangeas, and that's how I balance it out.
Yeah.
And you know, not everybody wants to do it. You'd rather pay a higher water bill, but you know, those are the most water thirsty plants I have. And everything that I have planted around them doesn't need as much water. So one way to get hydrangeas.
Yeah, and they do well in the ground here, but if you are wanting to plant them in containers, they also do well in containers. So think about that. The other thing is, too, if you have a slope, plant them at the bottom of the slope because water typically kind of collects at the bottom of the slope. And so they'll get a little bit more moisture, you know, from your sprinklers because water runs downhill. So if you have a slope, placing them at the bottom of the slope is also a good thing to do. So this is a good month to choose hydrangeas. However, when you see the blue hydrangeas, just note that if you plant them here in our native soil, they will not stay blue unless you feed them certain minerals. And you're generally just going to have the pink hydrangeas. Also know that some of the more recent strains of hydrangeas will repeat bloom. Now, I don't have that type because I planted mine a long time ago, so mine just have the one big bloom flush in June, and then they're pretty much done. Do you have any of those more recent varieties?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
I don't know. What, do you happen to know any of the names of the more recent ones?
I don't. Probably should have looked that up before we started the show. But
maybe we'll talk about it next month.
Yeah, but I think you can just Google repeat blooming hydrangeas, or if you go to a good garden nursery supply garden center, they should be able to give you some of the names and recommendations. The other thing that blooms this month that is so favorite of mine, and if you fly at all in California, like I fly back and forth to the Bay Area sometimes, I love flying in June because all the jacaranda trees are in bloom.
Oh, yeah.
And when you're coming in for your landing or when you're taking off and you're still at a low enough altitude, you just see these clouds of purple, you know, all over for miles and miles. And I just love seeing that from the air. So
do you know,
fun.
I have a jacaranda tree. And I love my jacaranda tree. But you know who loves my jacaranda tree more than I do?
Who?
All my neighbors.
Oh, how
because
funny.
Because I look out my kitchen window and I see the trunk of the tree.
Oh, right?
I see the
it's
trunk
too high.
Of the,
yeah.
It's too high. I have to walk outside and look up. Where all my neighbors, I'm kind of on a hill a little bit, all my neighbors look out their second story window and they have this beautiful beautiful tree. And they thank me for it.
That's
I take care
cute.
Of it, I water it, I prune it, and they all have this beautiful view of the tree, and I have to go out and look up.
That's very cute. Yeah, I have a jacaranda tree in my backyard. And in case you don't know, jacaranda trees do go deciduous, so they do drop all of their leaves, but only for a few months out of the year. And so what I've done in my backyard tree to make it more interesting in those months when it doesn't have leaves is we like to collect birdhouses when we go on a vacation. You know, we'll pick up a birdhouse. It's kind of a fun way to get a souvenir from places you've traveled. And so I've hung all the birdhouses in the jacaranda tree. And so when it doesn't have leaves or flowers, you still have something fun to look at by having the birdhouses there.
Well, that's really funny because I put birdhouses in my jacaranda
tree. Oh, how
tree
funny.
Too.
I didn't know that.
I have birdhouses. Whenever we go somewhere,
yeah.
We collect. Last year we were in the San Juan Islands, and I think I came home with 8 birdhouses.
Oh, wow.
This guy made these incredible handmade birdhouses alongside the road, and we couldn't decide. We're like, how much room do we have? And we took 8 of them.
Oh, wow. Yeah, but that's an idea for any deciduous tree.
But you know what else I like about the jacaranda being deciduous is that my house needs shade in the summertime and warmth in the wintertime. So in the wintertime, now it's open and lets the sun soak into the house. And in the summertime, when it gets hot, it shades the house.
Perfect.
And it's perfect. You know, we have a maple tree that does that too, and the two of them just act as a wonderful air conditioner for our house. And then in the wintertime, it opens it up, and we see the rest of the neighborhood.
That's great.
It's really pretty.
Yeah, so things to think about. If you take a look at just practically any neighborhood you go to in Southern California, you'll find this month these beautiful blue cloud-like canopies, and they're just stunning.
Now, some people don't like them.
And tell us why.
Because they all these beautiful leaves land on your car, and you walk on them, and you track them into the house. And I've known people who live on streets with jacaranda will never live on a street with jacaranda again. And I know people who just have the most wonderful memories about the jacaranda.
Yeah, and the key for me, and I thought about that before I decided where to plant mine. So mine's in the backyard, away from all cars. And it mostly drops its flowers in the flower bed because it's actually planted inside a, you know, flower bed kind of area. So it drops its leaves on the lawn and there and just a little bit on one of the paths in the garden. So that way it isn't, you know, sticking to your car or it's not close to a door of the house so nobody tracks them in. So if you do get one, and I really recommend it because they're just stunning when they bloom, and they're pretty trees the rest of the year too, but do pay attention to where you place it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I understand, isn't there a new one out that's like a miniature one?
There is. We saw that when we went to the plant introduction show in May when we went up to the Ball Horticultural growing grounds, and they invited master gardeners and people in the nursery business to come look at their new introductions. And one of them was a dwarf jacaranda tree. So I haven't seen it planted anywhere yet. But if you live in a, you know, smaller place that has a smaller yard, you might Google that and see if you can find it.
Yeah, because it's beautiful.
It is.
It's really
beautiful. And my jacaranda is definitely not dwarf. Mine's 2 stories tall. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Mine's taller.
Taller, yeah.
It's
older,
a long time.
Probably.
It's older.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. We've been there 20 years, and it was older when we got it.
When you got it, yeah. Yeah, mine's about 14 years old, so it's but it's still 2 stories tall. So So what else blooms in June? Oh, there's so many vines that bloom in June. Flowering vines. I love flowering vines. You know?
They're wonderful, aren't they?
Yeah. And my new favorite, it's actually not new, but kind of new for me the last few years, is mandevilla. Do you plant a lot of mandevilla?
Not a lot, but I have it.
Yeah.
It's easy to take care of.
It's so easy to take care of. And I love it in pots. I've been using it to kind of be the spiller in a pot, you know? So if I have a vertical plant in a pot, I like to have the mandevilla on the edges of the pot to act as the spiller and let that, you know, fall over the edges. But you can grow it up a trellis or a patio cover.
Yeah, it's grow. I have a shed outside going along a fence, and it's kind of growing between the shed and the fence, and it's just doing its own thing, and it's happy. And I come by, and it's blooming.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very little maintenance.
Very little. And I wouldn't say it was drought tolerant, but it's it doesn't freak out if you forget to water it. Because I have mine in pots, and you know me, I'm not very good at pot watering. So, I can get away with forgetting to water it, and it kind of hangs in there as opposed to other stuff that
mine
it wilts.
Mine does too.
Yeah. So, anyway, I love that, and they're very inexpensive. A lot of the big box stores have them in their garden centers in small pots for, you know, like $4 or $5 even. And then, of course, you can get the bigger gallon or so for more money. But yeah, that's my favorite one. And then the old tried and true are the trumpet vines. Do you have any trumpet vines at your house?
You know, I don't think I do.
Yeah, I don't have any at this house. I used to have a gorgeous violet trumpet vine that I loved. But I love walking on Balboa Island on the weekends, you know, for exercise and just to look at all those adorable little gardens. And they have tons of trumpet vines there, I was noticing.
They do a lot with a very small area.
They do. They do. If you want to get inspired and you have a small place, go for a walk around Balboa Island and you'll be really inspired.
It's
about
it. It's amazing what they can do.
Yeah.
Just amazing. Yeah. You have small areas, they have a lot of creativity down there.
Yeah. So a couple other things to talk about. This is not really a vine, but we treat it kind of like a vine. Bougainvillea. Do you have bougainvillea?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I do too. I have a fair bit of it. And mine's doing great this year. It's, gosh, the red bracts are so prolific because of all that rain, I'm guessing.
I have a funny one for you.
Yeah.
I have huge bougainvillea bushes.
Yeah.
And they were there, they were huge before when I moved in. And they happened to be on the north side of the wall.
Oh, interesting.
Very interesting. And when my trees weren't so big, they would bloom. Well, now, right now, my trees have gotten bigger, my neighbor's trees have gotten bigger. And so the last 2 years, I've had mostly a green hedge with a little bit of red.
Uh-huh.
And I have this big white wall between myself and my neighbor. Well, my neighbor texts me and asks me if my gardener would be kind enough to trim the bougainvillea. And she sends me a picture. And it's like 60 feet long, all these bougainvillea flowing over her and color from the ground to 8 feet high.
From your bougainvillea.
From my bougainvillea.
That have gone over the wall.
Oh, gone over the wall.
How funny.
So she has this huge red wall of bursting out bougainvilleas because she's on the south side.
The sunny side.
She's on the sunny side. I'm on the shadowy side, and all I have is green.
How funny.
And she says she loves it, but she's got her grandkids there, and they have big prickly, those big
thorns
in there, so we have to cut them. And I'm like, there's something wrong with this picture. I'm fertilizing them, taking care of them. I got a green bush, and she's got 50 feet of bloom. I mean, it's just spectacular.
Well, you're being such a good neighbor.
So my gardener went and cut off, and I see all these blooms just flying. And I don't know what I'm going to do, but I mean, I have a green bougainvillea hedge.
Oh, gosh.
So, and there's a lot of them. I probably have 10 of them. And
wow.
They're a good size. So it's like, now I have to rethink what I'm going to do because it's as the trees got bigger, it's never going to bloom.
Get sun.
It's got a really
side.
Nice green hedge, but flowers need sun.
Yeah, they sure do.
Amazing how that happens.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing about bougainvillea, because we see it everywhere in Southern California, and I know when I grew up with it at my parents' house, and it just, you know, my dad would have to go out and just whack the thing back because it was so prolific. It would start covering the roof of our little one-story house. And so I thought when I had my own gardens that bougainvillea must be super easy to grow. Well, they are once they're established, but they're a little tricky to start.
Really?
And since they're in full bloom and folks might be purchasing them at this time of year because they're so beautiful in the pots at the nurseries, I just wanted to give folks a bit of a heads up about how you need to plant them. They do not do well if you disturb their roots. So you know how we always tell people when they plant something to take it out of the pot and tickle the roots, right? To loosen the roots, get them, you know, spread out because they've been cooped up in that container. Well, you do not want to do that with bougainvillea. Who knew? I actually, in my early gardening years, killed a couple of them and thought, you know, how did I manage? These are so hardy. How on earth did I manage to kill them? So that's why. So anyway.
Good to know.
Yeah. So, and because they need to have a fairly well-established root system, I would recommend starting with a 5-gallon plant rather than a 1-gallon plant. You know, usually I'm a big fan of doing smaller is better because in a few months, you know, you have the bigger plant, but you saved the money by buying and planting the smaller plant. But with bougainvillea, because their roots are pretty sensitive, I think spending the money on a 5-gallon plant is a better option.
Good to know.
Yeah. And then what you want to do is you want to make... you want to dig a hole that's twice the size of the width of the, say, 5-gallon pot, and the same depth as the plant that's in the pot. And the reason is that they are subject to rot. And so you don't want to dig too deep of a hole where the plant might sink down into the hole and then get too much water in that hole. Then, of course, always when you plant something, you want to put in, you know, some all-purpose fertilizer, and go ahead and backfill with the native soil, and do make a watering well, because even though they're known to be drought tolerant, because, I mean, how many times have you driven, you know, down Coast Highway and you just see bougainvillea, you know, growing like crazy, and you know nobody's watering them, and so you figure they must be super drought tolerant. It's not so much that they're drought tolerant, but their roots will grow very deep until they find a source of water. And so that was another mistake I made when I first planted them, is that I wasn't watering them enough when they were young, and so they were dying. So do be sure when you plant them that you make that watering well of soil, you know, around the exterior of the hole that you dug. And you want to water them, because we generally plant them in the summer because they are they can be frost sensitive, so we often plant them in June, and the weather will be getting hot. So over this first summer, you need to especially be diligent about keeping them watered, and then eventually their roots will get, you know, deep enough that you know, in 5 years, say, you probably don't even need to water them at all, because they will have found their own source of water. But anyway, I just wanted to share that because I have killed a couple in my career. And so when you do plant them, you know, don't disturb their roots. Just take them gently out of the pot and set them in that hole, and then make sure you water them for
that is really good to know.
First year.
And they are hardy. I just took one bougainvillea out that was probably the size of a truck.
Yeah.
And we had to use a tractor to get it out. Seriously, we had a tractor had to get this bougainvillea out, and the roots were so deep.
Exactly, and that's why we think they're drought tolerant.
And I probably water that thing 2 to 3 times a year.
Yeah.
And that's it. And it's down the hill, and it gets beat. And once in a while, I just go put the hose on it. But it's 2 to 3 times a year, and yep. I know they found deep water somewhere.
Yeah. But for the first 3 years, and especially that very first year,
you need to water.
You need to water it, and then
kind of like with all our drought stuff, yeah. Everything needs to be watered right now if you're going to be planting it, because you know, tender roots,
yep,
baby roots.
So anyway, I just wanted to share that because they look so beautiful when you see them in the nursery right now. You know, even in the pots, they just are so full of. And of course, we know that they aren't really flowers; those are colored bracts. That the flower is that little teeny tiny white thing that's in the center of the colored bracts.
And it's so nice right now, you can see all the different choices and colors you can have.
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned that, because when we first installed the garden at the house I'm in now, you know, we had a landscaper do it because it was a big job. And they ended up getting two different colors of bougainvillea, but they weren't in bloom, so they didn't realize it. So I now, because we grow some of our bougainvillea up over a trellis that frames a door. And so on one side of the trellis, there's kind of an orangey one, and on the other side is this hot pink one. And it kind of bugs me, but I just have left them because I would have to start out with a teeny tiny new one, which I'm just not willing to do. So yeah, buying them now when you can see the color is really a good idea so you don't accidentally plant the wrong one.
And here's another one. If you buy bougainvilleas and you see them in a 5-gallon, they're going to get a lot bigger. You know, mine down, which I call down the hill that went over my horse shed, it was probably... It well reached over 10 feet like it was nothing onto the roof of this thing, and it covered a good portion of probably 15 feet of the roof.
Yeah.
So it was huge.
Yeah, and there are different varieties. So the old style ones all got huge, but there have been some that have been bred to be smaller, and I've seen them grown in pots. You know, big pots.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually quite a stunning thing to have a big pot of bougainvillea. But do make sure if you want to apply a bougainvillea in an area that isn't real big, that you look for one of the ones that don't.
Yeah, pay attention to sizing.
That don't cover barns.
Exactly.
Okay, on to a couple more things that are blooming this time of year. Bearded irises. Do you do any bearded irises?
I haven't. No. I know you do.
I do, yeah. And my mom did them when I was a kid, so I've been around them for a long time. And this is a good time of year to plant them because, again, they're blooming, and so you can see the colors that you're getting. But one of the things I need to do, because mine aren't blooming much anymore, is after about 3 years, the rhizomes, because they have these, they're not really a bulb, they have these like thick stems that grow horizontal kind of right at ground level, and that's where the roots come out, is out of the rhizome. Those things get so dense, and the old rhizome part in the middle kind of dies out, that they will quit blooming. And so what I need to do now, because mine aren't blooming, is I need to dig up those patches of Dutch iris, and bearded iris, and divide them and replant them so that I can get them to bloom again. So just so you know, if you have patches of bearded iris and they're not blooming, that's probably why.
Separate and blooming, you'll have more.
And so the way that you do that is you dig up the whole clump. It won't look like bulbs, where the bulb just peels off from the mother bulb. This rhizome structure will be, you know, kind of this big giant patch. And what you do is you take a sharp knife and you literally cut it. Kind of looks like maybe like a sweet potato.
Mm-hmm.
And so you cut it so that you get a chunk of the rhizome that has a fan of the leaves coming out and some roots coming out of the bottom of the rhizome. And you'll be able to see with your eyes, you know, where that's happening. And just make those cuts. It's like kind of like cutting a potato, you know. Just make those cuts. And what you want to end up with is a rhizome that has a fan of leaves coming out the top and roots coming out the bottom of the rhizome. And then when you replant them, you dig a nice hole, and you plant the rhizomes at the level of the soil. And it's a good idea to plant three, and you have them facing where the fan is at the edge of the hole that you dug. So you have three rhizomes with the fan facing out, the fan of leaves. When mm-hmm. I say fan, I mean the fan of leaves. And that way, they start to grow out from the center of this hole, and they have more room to spread as opposed to, you know, growing into the center. And also trim off the leaves. You just want to leave about 4 to 6 inches of the leaves, because whenever you transplant something, you want to give the plant a break so that it doesn't have to feed and produce water, you know, for too much plant material. So anyway, that's how you get your
iris
to bloom again.
Now, when you separate these, do you separate these at the beginning of the season, or do you separate them at the end of the season?
You can do both. I just wouldn't do it in the winter. So I would do it now, or you can do it in the fall. but maybe not in the heat of the summer or if in the winter mm-hmm. when it's super soggy. It's also a good idea when you cut the rhizomes into, you know, the individual new rhizomes to let them sit out. Like I like to do it in the morning. I go do something else, let them sit out for a few hours before I replant them in the ground. Because whenever you make a fresh cut, it's a good idea to have it what they call callus off a little bit to dry out so that it's not super moist, because that can promote a little bit of rot. So dig them up, separate them in the morning, and then plant them that afternoon if you can.
Fun.
Yeah, or the next day, but yeah. Okay, then the other thing that's blooming like crazy right now, which you probably don't grow because it's hotter where you are. Do you have any fuchsias?
No, I don't.
Yeah, because Katrina's in inland Orange County, and I'm in Irvine, so a little closer to the coast. And I do fuchsias, but only in pots. I don't do them in hanging baskets because even here they dry out pretty quick. But if you're by the beach, gosh, I love seeing people's fuchsias by the beach. Because
they're hanging, they're in pots, they're everywhere, they're gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah. So if you love fuchsias and you don't live in a place where it's terribly hot, then, gosh, do get some fuchsia hanging baskets. Those are pretty fun.
Any of the beach cities, it should be beautiful. And you could have hanging baskets. You could have baskets you could put on a table. You could put them anywhere.
Yeah.
Just, I tried. It's just
too hot.
It's too hot.
So here what I do is, and if I was good about watering, I could have hanging baskets, but I'm not good about watering. So where I have mine is they don't like deep, deep shade. They do need some sun to bloom. And I think a lot of folks, because I thought at first, oh, it's a shade plant. I'm going to put it in the shade. And then it never bloomed. But what I've since learned is they do like dappled light. So I put them under trees where you get that dappled mm-hmm. light coming through. Or when the sun's on one side of the tree, you know, they get sun for a few hours. So that's where mine are. They're actually under a giant sycamore tree. But as the sun moves, you know, they get a few hours of sun, and then the tree shades them, which they seem to love. So they're just in pots.
Experiment.
Yeah. And that's another thing, because I know folks who live in my neighborhood where the trees have gotten kind of big are always asking me what they can plant in the way of color under their tree canopy. And I have to tell them, you know, those trees are too big. The roots are too extensive. You can't put anything in the ground there. It's the tree roots are just going to completely...
Yeah, you can't dig a hole.
You can't dig a hole. And even if you manage to get a hole, the tree roots are going to suck all the nutrients away from that plant. So what I've gone to is I just have an assortment of pretty decorative pots that I put under that tree. And that's how I get my color, is planting plants in the pots. And I love to do begonias and fuchsia and other, you know, part sun, dappled, shady-ish, but not full shade.
And it gives you beautiful color, too. And the way you put it around, it's just placed in the right place.
Yeah.
And it's pleasing to the eye, and it lets the tree be the tree.
Exactly. And then the other good thing is if you have automatic sprinklers, those things are getting watered automatically when the sprinklers mm-hmm. come on. So anyway, another great place where you can have a little bit of color with some June blooming plants. Well, we're now at the stage where we need to let you know that you're listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. And a reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the station, the university, or the UC Board of Regents. Okay, I think we should probably move on from, you know, what's always my favorite mm-hmm. topic, which is the the things that bloom, and let's talk about the things that we eat.
Wonderful.
What have you got in your garden that you're able to harvest or about able to harvest right
now? Oh my goodness, there's so many things going off. I'm just been watching those tomato plants like an expectant mother or expectant father.
Full of green tomatoes?
Yeah, I am ready for tomatoes. I have my basil planted, and I sit there and wait.
Come on, bruschetta.
Yeah, and the buffalo mozzarella is ready, so just grow, baby, grow. What are you planting right now? And cucumbers and everything else.
Yeah, the same, waiting for those to get ripe. But I'm excited about the fruit trees berry vines because my blueberries are loaded. They did so well this year, I think, because of all of the rain. And because I remembered to fertilize. That might have helped.
It's amazing how that helps.
But the peach tree is loaded. And we should probably tell people about June drop.
Tell people about June drop.
Yeah. In early June, like this first week probably, you may notice if you have peach trees that they and or plum trees, that if they were super loaded with small peaches, we suggested to you in April and May that you go out and thin them by flipping off with your thumbnail the little tiny pea-sized or marble-sized fruit so that you only ended up with one fruit every 3 or 4 inches. But if you didn't do that, what your trees will do is something called June drop, where somehow that tree knows that there's too many fruits and they will just let go of a bunch of them.
Yeah, and you know, here's what else. I have an early season peach, which I'm not going to have an early season peach anymore. I've been trying this early season peach. It blooms early. You get peaches early, but it's not very sweet.
Oh, interesting.
And this year I got a plethora of peaches on it, and we didn't take them off soon enough, and I have so many branches that broke. Because there were so many.
Yep.
And I was going to get rid of the tree, but then it came out with like thousands. I've never seen this tree. I threatened this tree with its life. And it just started producing. And we were gone and we came back. And there was so much that my branches are breaking off the tree. And I'm trying to pull them off. And I know I'm going to get rid of this tree, but I just felt so bad. So even if you're going to keep the tree, you got to get rid of some of those. Because I've lost a lot of branches on this one tree. It was just so much. I mean, the water was so good this year, and the trees are coming. So just for the sake of the tree, you need to thin it.
Yeah, exactly.
If you haven't done it yet, do it.
I've had branches that I have broken, and then some that I end up making a little forked, you know, support so that they don't break. You know, put a piece of wood that has a fork in it to support it so it doesn't break. So, look at those peaches, depending on the variety that you have. Katrina was mentioning she has an early peach. There are early season, mid-season, and late season peaches. So if you plant one of each, you can have peaches pretty much the whole summer.
The early season, I was told they're not as sweet.
Not as sweet.
And I've been every year thinking it's going to get sweeter, it's going to get sweeter. And it's still not as sweet.
Yeah.
And so I think I'd rather wait and plant something else and get a fruit that, because I know I'm going to have really good peaches.
Right.
And I'm just, is it worth the calories kind of stuff when they're just not that
sweet?
Or
the space in the garden, because most of us can only have so many fruit trees. Yeah.
So now I got to think of a new fruit tree for next year.
When your peaches do get ripe and you go out to harvest them, it is always a good idea to harvest early in the day for anything, whether it's your fruit off trees or veggies. Also, the birds are probably going to want it as well as you, so consider putting bird netting over your tree if it's a dwarf tree and you can reach it. My tree's too tall, so it's hard for me to net it. So what I do is I tie either that reflective tape,
mm-hmm.
or you can take old CDs and tie them to the branches of your tree with a fishing line, and then, you know, they will move in the wind, and that will help keep the birds away. And then the other thing that I did accidentally is I found this really cool windmill that was made out of garden trowels, you know, and put mm-hmm. on a wheel. And so it turned this into a windmill that's probably five feet tall. It's on a, you know, wooden post and it spins. And I was just buying it for a garden decoration, but I happened to put it adjacent to the peach tree. And I noticed the first year I did that, I had way less bird damage because they didn't like that windmill.
Interesting.
You know, blowing around. So so that's another thing to think about is buy a decorative windmill or make one yourself, and that will keep the birds away.
Or the CDs or even ribbons, reflective ribbons in the trees. You know, one thing I found, which I feel so bad about, is I have to be so careful when I put netting over my trees because I've actually had birds go up underneath the net and get in the tree, and I feel horrible. So what I do now is I really try to tie... I put it over top of the tree and then try to cinch it down as much as possible so I can't have any little critters get up in that tree.
That's a great
point. I felt so bad when I found them in the tree.
Yeah.
So I like your idea about the CDs or the other things because you don't take... It's a hassle getting it on a tree, especially if trees are getting... It's one thing if they're small, but I have some larger trees and it's taking two of us with sticks trying to get this net over the tree, and then it gets stuck and it's not easy. And
yeah, so. I've given up on the netting now that my trees have gotten too big, but I do still use it on my blueberry pots because the birds will come eat every single blueberry if you don't net it. And so what I do there, though, because they're in pots, is I take the netting and then I make little loops, staples, like giant staples out of cut-up coat hangers.
Mm-hmm.
I just bend the coat hanger wire into like a U shape, and then I use it like a tent stake almost.
Very interesting.
And I stake the bottom of the netting, you know, down into the soil in the pot. So it's a little bit of a hassle to then harvest, but I just take, you know, the side, and I take the staple out and pull the netting up, pick the blueberries, and then put it back down. So there's a lot of different strategies, but do be aware, if you want to keep your fruit, you're probably going to have to do something to protect it from the birds.
Yeah, we thought we had enough fruit to share, but we had a bird that liked to take one bite out of every piece.
Doesn't that drive you crazy?
Yeah. Oh,
I know. I hate when, you know, we get, because we live up against open space, mice and rats in the veggie garden, and the darn things will take one bite out of a perfectly ripe tomato. And I'm like, you can have a tomato, but you have to eat the whole thing. Don't ruin six of them, you know.
Or more, yeah. Just like eat one.
Yeah, exactly. And so speaking of veggies, if you didn't get your vegetable garden planted yet, or if you were delayed in switching over to the warm season plants, you still have time to do it in June to get your peppers, your tomatoes, your squashes,
just
your
don't
beans.
Buy seeds, just buy plants.
Exactly. Do beans, I would still plant from seed, you know, green beans, but everything else I would get 6 packs or 4 inches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you don't want six of them, buy it the same price, you get a 4-incher.
Right.
You know, you're not going to need 6 cucumbers.
Yeah, exactly. So do still... You know, plant your veggie garden if you haven't already. And if you don't have in-ground space or a raised bed, pots and wine barrels are awesome for growing veggies in. But just remember, bigger is better. So don't try and plant a tomato in a little 8-inch pot.
Hold the thought.
Yeah, you're going to want a pot that you can hug. So put your arms out like you're giving somebody a hug, and that's how big of a pot you want to grow a tomato or a zucchini or something like that in. You can probably get maybe 3 pepper plants in a pot that size, but probably only 1 tomato.
And sometimes you just have to make decisions.
Yeah.
Like, what do I want?
Yeah.
You know, sometimes we're fortunate enough to have like everything, but that's few and far between. We just have to decide, and maybe one this year and something else different next year.
Yeah.
And remember, they like sun.
Absolutely. So for any vegetables, fruit trees, and a lot of the flowering plants, you need to have 6 to 8 hours of sun in order to get.
Trust me, I know that from my bougainvilleas now.
There you go. Case in point. So let's see. Let's talk a little bit more about some of the other garden tasks that you might want to do in June. And if you have roses, which Katrine and I both have roses. You want to keep, you probably had a beautiful bloom flush in May.
Beautiful.
Gosh, the May roses were spectacular.
Oh, everything's spectacular. That rain, oh my goodness.
What a gift.
What a gift. It's flushed everything out. Everything is just, I can't believe how things, I neglected my yard and it's still beautiful.
Yeah, there you go. Mother Nature took over. But for your roses, do deadhead. I notice mine are getting lots of flowers that are finished, and so I love my roses to bloom throughout the whole summer. So get out there and deadhead your roses, and that just means to cut off the blooms at the node where a leaf is, and you want to look for a leaf that has 5 leaflets. As you know, on a rose, the leaves come in little groups.
Now, why is that?
I don't know, but they do. Mother Nature decided that's how it should be. But sometimes the leaflets are in groups of 3, and sometimes they're in groups of 5. And so you want to pick a 5-leaflet group, and you want that leaflet to be pointing out from the plant, not into the center of the plant, because the direction of that leaflet is how the new stem will grow. And you always want your stems to grow out, not in.
Out and airy.
Yes, because if they all grow in, they're going to run into each other, and that will cause more disease and less airflow. So yes, prune your roses, and then also you want to feed your roses after each bloom flush, so that you encourage them to continue blooming.
And the easiest thing to do is there's fertilizer out there that says for roses. So if you don't know what to feed them, just something that says for roses.
Yes. Or you can also... I love when I'm giving a talk to say, if you have a container of fertilizer and it says vegetable food, you can use that. Because guess what? For vegetables like tomatoes and peppers, what are you trying to get? Flowers. Because you want the flowers so that you get the vegetables, the tomato and the pepper. So if you don't happen to have it and you have time and you look in your cupboard and you have a box of vegetable food, go ahead and use it. It's okay to use it on your roses.
Yeah. And go ahead and use it on your vegetables.
Exactly. Use it on your and if you have rose food, guess what? You can use that on your vegetables too. So for roses, keep them deadheaded, keep them fed, and also for all of our gardens, we'll talk about mulch. This is right before we get into our super hot weather. And one of the best things we can do for our garden to help it survive that hot weather is to mulch it. And Katrina and I were talking before we started recording, because we've been reading up on, and we're going to have a show on fire safety for our yards. And so there's some issue about having a lot of mulch in your yard, because Katrina can tell you what happened when her area was in a fire with the mulch.
You know, I'm in a really big dilemma about mulch, because I love mulch. I get truckloads of mulch. I love 4 to 6 inches of mulch everywhere you could possibly have. And it makes the yard look wonderful. It's great for keeping my plants cool. It's great for keeping the water in. It's just, I love mulch. But a couple of years ago when we had that fire in October, I think it was October 9th, I walked to somebody I know's yard, and their yard was lit up on fire. It was ember everywhere. The mulch was underneath their trees. And it really made me think. And their compost heap was on fire, and I'm standing there looking at this yard on fire, and it was the mulch. So there's my dilemma. I live in a fire area. Do I want to have that? But there's so many wonderful benefits, so I don't have an answer to this.
Yeah, and I personally am in my own garden compromising by the area. I have a slope and a side yard that abut up against open space, and I am not mulching those anymore, because mm-hmm. I figure, you know, that's where the fire is going to come from, mm-hmm. is the open space. And so when it hits my slope and my side yard, I don't want there to be any fuel for the fire there. But in my flower beds, I'm mulching with compost, not with big bark chips or mm-hmm. anything. And so I think that is less of a problem. And then in my front yard, I did still mulch with some shredded bark. So whether that was a good thing or not, I don't know. But maybe the fire truck will be right on the curb there at my front yard. I don't know. Anyway, we're going to have a show on fire safety. Do you know when that's going to be, Katrina?
No, I don't have. We don't have it scheduled right now.
Okay, but we're working on one. That will be this summer.
It's a really good show. We got so many requests and we updated it. So it's going to be a really, really nice show to be able to play. And I learned so much after that show. I came home and I got rid of dead plants. I got rid of stuff touching my plants, touching my house. I got stuff off my roof. I made sure my gutters were cleaned out. I mean, it just went through and like, how can I make my house safer? Put smaller mesh on my vents in my attic.
You know,
I didn't know that the vents were, that was out of date, what we have in our vents in our attic. So
sparks can enter.
Yeah, sparks. Yeah. And do you know most fires burn from inside out?
So the sparks come in.
The sparks come in into the attic. Nobody knows about it. It sits there, and hours later, it just starts, and the house is burned from the inside out.
Oh,
so if there's one thing to do, that's something really simple, putting smaller mesh on there.
Yeah.
And it will last for for years and years and years.
Well, keep an ear out or an eye on our website, the Master Gardener website, and we'll have it posted, that show posted when it's available.
We already have a show that's available. We're going to do another updated show.
Oh, okay.
So if you want to look at something now, it's called Creating Defensive Space from Wildflowers.
Wildfires,
excuse me. flowers on my brain. And we'll be putting, the other one will be part two. So the first one's really good. We just kind of added to it for part two.
Okay, good. So right now you can go to our website, the University of California Master Gardeners of Orange County website, click on the radio show tab, and then you'll see a list of all of the radio shows that we've done. You can look for the one on wildfire safety.
Yeah, Creating a Defensible Space. I believe it's under C for right now.
Okay, cool.
Cool.
Let's talk about, again, since we're kind of on the heat end of things, mulch your garden, particularly if you're not near any wildfire areas, then I would say it's still safe to mulch your garden.
And you know what, Tina, without you and I talking, I did the same thing. I did the smaller, almost compost regarding my flowers, and then I just didn't do anything on my hill or on my fruit trees this year. And I know I have a lot more weeds than if I mulched, but I also know the Santa Ana winds blow right straight at my house and would carry anything to my house from that yard.
Yeah. So use common sense. Also go to the websites of the Orange County Fire Authority. They'll have lots of good tips for you as well. And listen to our little show. That might give you some additional help. So other things to do to prepare for the heat are, if you have lawns, you want to adjust your height of your lawnmower so that it is cutting your lawn taller.
Yes.
Because the taller the height of the blades of the grass, the more it shades the roots, and the less water will be needed and evaporate.
And it looks beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It really, tall grass looks really pretty. And people don't think that you're saving water, but you really are. It just looks really nice. And you have to tell your gardeners, if you have a gardener, because a lot of times they'll cut it the same length all year long.
Right.
So tell them you want it on the longest, that the gardener, or 4 to 6 inches.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And then also when you're watering your lawn, well, not just your lawn, but your whole garden, this is a suggestion we make all year long, but it's especially important during the summer. And that is, don't have your sprinklers come on for one cycle only. Have your sprinklers come on for multiple cycles in that same day. So, for instance, if you go to your water district's website and it says it recommends watering twice a week, it will tell you twice a week, but it will also say two cycles of X minutes or three cycles of X minutes. And the reason it wants you to do it in cycles instead of saying a whole 10 minutes straight, you would do two cycles of 5 minutes, is because it allows a break in between those cycles of irrigation. The water gets to percolate down deeper into the soil and you have less runoff. So, for instance, if you have 10 stations in your sprinkler system, then you run each of those stations once, and then you go back and run each of those stations again. And virtually every sprinkler timer I know can be set up that way. And if you don't set your timer yourself, you can ask your gardeners to do it that way. Or I actually, even though I have gardeners who do the mow and blow stuff, and then I do all of the flower and vegetable stuff, I don't let them touch my controller.
No, I don't.
So what I did is, you know, I happen to have the instruction booklet from when we installed it, and I just got myself familiar with how to set it. And so I take care of setting it, and I also know where the off button is, so that when we have rain, like we had that weird unexpected rain in May, I went out and turned the sprinklers off.
Absolutely.
So do become familiar with it. If you don't have your instruction booklet, go out and look at the brand and the model number. And I have yet to find, or I have yet not to be able to find a copy of the booklet on the internet, because I've helped friends look theirs up. Mm-hmm. And if you have the name and the model number of the sprinkler system, odds are you'll be able to find a copy of the instructions on the internet.
And you know, they're coming out with these new sprinkler systems that you could do from your phone.
Oh, gosh, wouldn't that be nice?
A fellow master gardener was showing me he could be out of state, and he's looking at his weather report or whatever, and he goes and changes his sprinkler system from another state.
Wow.
I'm looking into that because I'm like, oh, how cool would that be?
You know, that's a great idea. I wonder, I'm going to have to look in to see how much it costs to switch over to that kind of controller.
Yeah.
It's a good idea.
We have about another, five, six, 7 minutes.
Oh, cool.
But that's something interesting to do. And I don't trust my gardener with a controller. They tend to, most everybody I've talked to, gardeners like to water.
Well, because there's less danger, theoretically.
So they like to water. And yeah. I know when I took over my water bill, it went way down, and my garden's actually prettier now. So I'm in charge of the water. And, you know, if you have a high water bill. And when you talked about runoff, Tina, everybody that's listening to this show, there's a no-no word. It's called runoff. There's no reason to have runoff. Do you have runoff on anything, Tina?
Not me, no.
No. So if you have runoff, we're talking about runoff. When you're talking about runoff, I'm sitting there going, we live in Southern California. We shouldn't have runoff. So if you have runoff, if you're listening, you need to do something with your sprinkler system, because it's a no-no. You could take that water and put it to a hydrangea or something. You know, find a use for that water. It doesn't go off your property or off your lawn or off your plants.
Exactly.
Really, you don't need to. I haven't had runoff in years, and I'm staying within my water allocation, so I like plants.
Yeah, I do too. And by monitoring it yourself, you can be aware of how much water you're using, which sections of your yard need more water and which need less. You know, I put some sections on a lot more frequent watering, and other sections I hardly water at all.
And, you know, it also changes. In the summertime, I have a lot of shade from my jacaranda and maple tree. So those plants that got sun in the wintertime, it's really not changing it that much from summertime, because it's hotter, but it's in the shade versus sunny and not in the shade.
There you go.
So you got to pay attention.
Yeah. So speaking of paying attention, this is also the season where we have a lot of insect activity.
That was going to be our last one. Perfect.
Our last little topic is pest control. Probably since April this year, because we had such a wet winter, you've been noticing tons of insect activity, especially snails this year. Oh my gosh, I can't believe how many snails. So do stay on top of the snail bait. You want to reapply that. It isn't enough to put it out in April. You'll be seeing tons more snails right now, so you got to go out there and bait for snails again. And then every time your roses bloom and have that tender new growth, odds are you'll see some aphids on your roses. And so you'll want to take a strong jet of water from your hose with that little brass nozzle, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and just knock those aphids off. And that's using a very least toxic method, because we do like to encourage everyone to practice IPM, integrated pest management. And that's where you use the least toxic method of controlling pests and not break out the broad spectrum pesticides right away, because they'll kill things you want, like bees and beneficial insects. So
If you need a little, you don't need to use a lot.
Right.
You know, use as minimal what you need to use.
And
we
identify,
do like those beneficial insects.
We do.
Need them.
We need them. And do, if you aren't sure what's damaging your plant, take a little piece of the leaf or whatever it is that's being damaged and go to a good nursery that has knowledgeable people.
But if you do that, put it in a Ziploc bag before you take it there, because you don't want to get wherever you're taking it infected with whatever problem you have.
Absolutely. The other thing that you can do is take a photo of the damage and you can send it to the Master Gardener hotline, and a Master Gardener will take a look at it and email an answer back to you. Or you can go to the University of California's, if you like to do research on your own and some self-diagnosis, you can go to the IPM website and you can just Google UCIPM.
For Integrated Pest Management.
And it will take you to this amazing website, and you just can search by the type of plant or vegetable that you are concerned about, and up will pop all of the diseases and pests that affect that, and then you can just click on them and look at them until you find, hey, that's what's going on, and it will tell you how to solve your problem.
Yep.
Like the nasty tomato hornworms, you know, it'll tell you to hand-pick them or spray with BT, Bacillus thuringiensis.
So, all kinds of good stuff.
Yeah.
And if you forget it all, Google Master Gardeners, Orange County, California. You see Master Gardeners, Orange County, California, and there we are. And with that, Tina, we are out of time.
Happy gardening and happy vacation, because the vacation season is coming up.
Happy gardening, happy enjoy your yard right now. Go out, have a cup of tea, a cocktail, something. Go enjoy your yard and invite your friends over and have fun. And we'll see you next month.